I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
Leinster could offer me $5 million a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Johnny Moe!
Robbie's weekly.
Little reverse pass. Score!
Magic!
Hello and welcome to the 42 Rugby Weekly Extra. Murray Kinsella here. Hope you all had a lovely weekend. And joining me on the line, as always, from Osaka in Japan, is Owen Tula. And I know you're excited, Owen, to get stuck into this episode. Some great rugby played.
Yeah, cracking weekend, both in Europe and over here in Japan. I was lucky enough to get to a couple of games and they were exceptionally exciting finishes. So, yeah, lots to get through.
And a big week ahead for you guys in Kintetsu Liners. I saw the draw. You're into kind of the business end of it now, a big week ahead.
Yeah, knockout stages now, so we play up in Tokyo against Sanix on Sunday. So yeah, really big game for the club. So yeah, it's kind of been a long time coming. We've had a kind of elongated season with a game by for the last 3 months, so it's already been building towards the knockout stages. So yeah, everyone's exceptionally excited, and it's going to be it'll be exciting up in Chinchibu no Miya, the national stadium up in Tokyo, so can't wait.
Happy days. We'll have loads of members looking out for the result, I've no doubt. And I'm sure they want an update on Brady. I can hear my puppy John howling outside to try and get back in. How's Brady getting on?
Brady, to be honest, he's putting on, I think both our dogs are exceptional eaters. He's putting on a couple of kilos every day by the looks of it. He's getting bigger. Sinead's doing a great job. He's pretty well trained at this stage. Anytime I'm on FaceTime, he's sitting on command and exiting the back door anytime he needs to do his business. So she's doing a great job.
Better job than me anyway. He sits, but I don't know about the rest, but I'll keep trying anyway. He's a big buster as well. And he's playing with the rugby ball, actually. I'm looking out the window, so that's a good sign. Anyway, let's get into the Leinster match first off, because this was an unbelievable game. Test match quality, absolutely, across the board. We have a simple question from Ian O'Reilly for the two of us. He says, where does this rank in away wins for Leinster in Europe?
I was actually thinking that before I came on the pod. I was reflecting on games gone by. Obviously, the Northampton win in 2010 and the Millennium, that comeback win, it kind of had similar feeling to it. I'd put it right up there. You're playing current Heineken Cup and Premiership champions over in Exeter, and to show, I think the really pleasing thing is to show the composure going 14-0 down. It almost had very similar feel to Saracens last year in the Aviva, where Saracens got off to that fast start and you kind of feared for Leinster after that opening 10 minutes. But I think that it was what is really pleasing is the composure and character they showed to get back in the fight and play the rugby that we've seen them play so well over the last couple of seasons. It was, I'd put it right up there.
Absolutely. You think of Toulouse away, which was a quarterfinal as well, and some stunning rugby played that way years ago. Leo Cullen referenced the Bloodgate game afterwards in terms of, I suppose, importance to the province. He also underlined that, listen, it's great winning quarterfinals. I mean, he's the most unflappable man anyway, but it really doesn't matter because what comes next is what matters. The rest of us, though, can, I think, delight in this performance. And there's so many little bits to pick out. As you mentioned, 14-0 down, like the logical part of my brain there is going, no matter what happens over the next, whatever, 70 minutes, it's going to be exciting. But the logical part of me is saying a team as good as Exeter don't lose from here. Let's dig into that poor start though first, because I haven't seen Leinster probably start like that. A penalty concession from Toner offside, free kick for closing the gap, and then to concede on first phase. Obviously loads of stuff done well by Exeter own, but it was very un-Leinster like.
Yeah, almost a nervy type of start, you would say. And just gave it, the theme of the game for me was who could win field position and exert their attacking pressure on the opposition. And obviously Leinster facilitated that for Exeter early on, and it's a superb scrum launch from Exeter off that left side, a little double blocker play, and all the little details. They're exceptionally well coached team by Baxter. You can see all the little details of what they're trying to do on their plays, who they're trying to target. Simmons going at the line, he understands that he's going to have to get tackled as he passes the ball just to sit down Robbie Henshaw front line. And I think probably a theme of Leinster in that first 10 minutes was they were very focused on man defending. So Exeter were holding quite a lot of width off their structured attack. And if you kind of freeze frame it, when Exeter go to the line, there's big spacing in between O'Loughlin and Lowe. And what that means is as Leinster's trying and push off those front decoy runners, if you like, it means if you're not connected and you start to get lateral in your defense, that's when those mismatches occur. And I think Lowe, obviously Henshaw gets taken out front door legitimately with a really good running line from Slade. But then it's this disconnection from O'Loughlin and Lowe. Obviously O'Loughlin now has to bite in on the ball carrier because Henshaw is now out of the defensive line. And there's just too much of a separation between Lowe and O'Loughlin. If you're going to play that up and out defense, then you've got to really push those attackers to the outside and be connected with your inside defenders. And I thought that was probably a poor, obviously a really well executed play from Exeter, but it was a poorly defended play, particularly on the edge, that connection between Lowe and O'Loughlin, and for Keenan to have to come in there. If you think the fullback should always be closing to last man, but Keenan's got to enter in the line in between O'Loughlin and Lowe to try and tackle O'Flaherty. And obviously Keenan will be disappointed that he misses the tackle, but O'Flaherty was almost unplayable in that opening 10 minutes. And yeah, perfect start from Exeter, exactly what they would have practiced on the training field, but was probably a theme of Leinster's defensive system in that first 10, 15 minutes, that they were very lateral in allowing those aggressive runners coming from deep and breaking kind of soft shoulders.
Absolutely. They'll be frustrated. Even the patch that Exeter had early in the second half as well, some really kind of uncharacteristic defensive errors from Leinster, just getting disconnected from each other. And after that try, the kind of errors continued. They did get a bit of stretch in their first kind of proper attack out to the left, but Lowe's offload goes forward off Henshaw. And what follows is a long kind of multi-phase passage on that leads to Slade kind of skiding through, and lovely kind of decision early as Keenan bites in towards him again to pass to O'Flaherty. But it was a well-constructed final phase. Again, I think Leinster will be disappointed with that.
Yeah, again, it's almost a repeat of the first phase try where Leinster are getting quite lateral in their defence. You really want to be aggressive off the line and don't allow those backdoor runners attack the line. You really want to continue to keep forward. And if it means you leave the last two attackers on the edges, which, to be fair, as you said, Exeter were holding real good width in their attack. Sometimes you just got to leave those extra numbers in the 15 and make them throw over the top rather than going through you. And it was similar when Slade gets the ball out the back. Furlong just hesitates, starts to get lateral. O'Loughlin is kind of preoccupied with Francis, who is outside Slade. And then you see the big disconnect between O'Loughlin and Larmer. Larmer is worried about the back rower on the edge rather than staying connected with O'Loughlin. And Exeter are just good enough again to break those soft shoulders. Slade attacks the seam between Furlong and O'Loughlin. And as you said, really composed pass to find O'Flaherty. And again, probably Larmer should make that tackle. Scrambling back, he has the opportunity to take down O'Flaherty, but as we said, he was almost untouchable in that first 10. But yeah, well-executed attack from Exeter, but kind of frustrating for Leinster to concede a similar type try.
As you say, there were shades of that Saracens game, and what did Exeter have? 80% possession, dominating territory, as you say, early on. But it was the manner in which Leinster stayed to task that really impressed me. And funnily enough, I think actually Exeter probably deviated from their plan a little bit more after going to 14-0. There was not an abandon, but an excitement there. And even in his in-game interview, Rob Baxter is always very honest. And he was talking about, you know, we feel there's a bit more here for us, which was a fair feeling based on those opening 10 minutes. But it felt like Exeter probably went away from some of the things they did well. Whereas Leinster, as you say, stuck to trying to get that territory. You think of even Johnny Sexton before he went off, that beautiful kick over into the left-hand corner. You had Hugo Keenan finding space behind on the right. Even from their exits, they were kicking long to try and boss that territory. And it allowed them then, when they struck, just to be brilliantly clinical, because their attack on, like after an excellent opening from Exeter, Leinster's was really efficient and really purposeful, I thought, in terms of how they went about breaking them down.
Yeah, I thought that's a great way of putting it. I thought all their structured attacks, you could see the weaknesses they were trying to exploit. And exceptionally accurate with it. Obviously, the bounce back try that Leinster get, as you said, comes off a bit of grit from Leinster. If you look back at some of the tackles, the double hit from Ruddock and Van der Flyer and Gray, Henshaw absolutely monsters Woodburn down that left edge and wins a jackal penalty, which leads to the line out for the first try, I'm pretty sure. And I think it was that grit, physicality, things that Leinster would have been really wanting to put right from a year ago. I think that's what they displayed. And then when they got into territory, they were able to execute exceptionally well. The try off the play, that off that phase play shape, is just exceptionally well worked, where they run that little blocker shape, 12 at the line. Conan comes short and they go out the back to 10. And then Keenan does brilliantly to square up and power through Hogg and Woodburn to offload to Lowe to score. It was just exceptionally well executed sequence of phase shape. And Keenan, I think, obviously had two assists in the game, offloaded really well, and he was kind of the catalyst to that opening score.
Mm, he's a new Sonny Bill Williams with his offload. It looks really natural and fluid for him, and I think it's so exciting to see him continually add strings or strengthen different strings to his bow. And there were a number of unbelievable individual performances across the board. Let me throw one question at you in that regard, and we'll get into the rest of the detail. David Lee emailed me and he said, is there a more improved player this year than Josh van der Flier? Is he doing enough to put himself into a Lions conversation? What do you reckon, Owen?
I believe he has, yeah. I think we always knew his defensive capabilities. And again, I think he was top tackler at the weekend. From a Leinster perspective, his numbers were outrageous. I think he made 22 tackles, forced 2 turnovers. But it's probably the other side of the ball, his ball carrying. I just think there's just an added venom and an acceleration into contact where he's now winning those collisions. When we talk about that, I know we tweeted at the little stack play, Leinster play, second phase, but the initial carry is Van der Flyer, first phase, where again, what we're talking about, the accuracy of Leinster launches, have obviously identified Simmons, where he sets up defensively off a short line out, and it's a Henshaw little flat pass to Van der Flyer, and he gets Simmons perfectly, really, really good gain line, which facilitates the second phase, where it's Conan playmaking. He's got a lock on short, and then that lovely little triple stack shape where they play Keller on a little in pass through a gap. It was really creative, but all started from a powerful Van der Flyer carry. So that side of his game has progressed exceptionally well, and he's becoming that all round seven. When you think of the guys that Leinster are missing, he's really stood up and is probably one of Leinster's best players at the moment.
Yeah, really assertive kind of presence about him at the moment, and brilliant to see him continue adding things to his game. The carrying wasn't a strength really, I don't think, before, but just the timing of the runs around the corner, just a bit of venom, and as you say, they're putting him in good positions and probably asking him to put his hand up more there. It's been brilliant. I love that play, absolutely, the one you shared on Twitter. And you're kind of outstacking the stackers, because Exeter have been obviously famous in that regard. And there were so many similar plays and similar ideas and similar tactics. And there are a lot, I suppose, of shared kind of strengths between the two teams. Mm-hmm. I just loved how Leinster went about their attacking ideas and philosophies. That in pass you mentioned there was one of several of them. And even Kelleher, at times it looked like he was just tracking Johnny Sexton to get those passes. There was the one in the second half where they run the exit just after scoring. Mm-hmm. I thought that was a really, I don't know, dominant moment where they set up beautifully. So much detail around it with Dev Toner linking at the back and then O'Loughlin on that kind of long inside pass off Ross Byrne. They did also get great change out wide on, and it looked like they had identified a weakness out there in the winger's defence, and Hogg even as well. He missed his tackle for Larmer. But the second score, just after Ross Byrne comes into the game, again, a first phase try. Where was your balance there in terms of attacking quality and defensive error, I suppose?
Yeah, probably I would say, looking back on it, Exeter got a little bit tight on their interior defence and probably lost too many numbers to that little shape we've seen Leinster run so often, the 9 to 12, 13 short, 10 at the back. And if you get your spacing wrong and you allow time for Ross Byrne to turn the corner, he's obviously got low coming on his outside hip. But the timing of his pass is just brilliant to put Keenan into space. As I said, if you get tight on the inside and you've got to soften off in that 13 wing channel, it just all the kind of attacking rights are obviously with Leinster, and they're able to go at the extra defenders in the 22. And Keenan does a brilliant job, doesn't he, in putting Larmour into the corner, and it's a great finish from Larmour. But yeah, you would think Leinster showed that play so many times, Exeter would have had a different defensive setup. They've got to worry about the maul as well. If you look where Woodburn is, he's kind of defending in behind the maul as the blindside winger. So that has implications. If he doesn't leave early from that position, then Hogg can't close at 15 on the far edge as soon as he would have liked. So probably the power of the Leinster maul and that pick and go shape probably had the blindside wing a little bit worried about releasing too early. So yeah, well executed play from Leinster. It's been one of their staple plays over the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, and an excellent second touch from Ross Byrne after he puts the ball into touch, and then he absolutely nails the sideline conversion, and then he sticks over a 46-metre penalty to kind of edge them in front somehow after that start. Mm-hmm. We got a question from Michael in the members' WhatsApp group, Owen. It says, it's just asking about his international rugby prospects, I suppose, a debate that's been had quite a lot in the last few months. And it does remain to be seen on that front. But like Michael's pointing out that, you know, there's plenty of competition there. I suppose that will come further down the line. But this did feel like a test level match where Ross Byrne was a really dominant figure. How impressed were you on?
Really impressed. As you said, his goal kicking, his stats in Pro 14 were outrageous for the season. And I think that's obviously a critical component to a test level 10, that you're able to kick those high pressure kicks. As you said, his timing for the Larmour try, the pass is exceptional, and then his over the top pass in the second half off his left hand was super accurate. I think they might have been on pen advantage, but I thought his game control, as you said, when Leinster scored that critical try in the second half, I really thought that was a turning point in the game, and then for him to have the confidence to run from their 22 off the restart, which Leinster ended up line breaking from, I thought just shows his confidence levels and his ability to steer around the pitch and have a feel for the game, the momentum of the game. And obviously the momentum had swung in Leinster's favour at that stage, and he was keen to kind of keep the foot on the throat. So all the signs are good for him. Like any 10, he just needs time in the jersey in those high pressure occasions to learn from those little momentum swings, how to manage games. And I think he's clearly kind of trending in the right direction there, isn't he? And I think the more game time he's afforded, the better he's obviously going to get. Really positive performance from him. Because, again, you were kind of worried with Johnny going off after 28 minutes. We know how influential he is in the team. But I think Leinster are pretty blessed now with Ross Byrne there and Harry Byrne in behind as well. So a little bit of depth in that 10 position is building.
Totally. And I think assertive kind of describes it again. I loved his defensive performance most of all. 9 tackles completed, and there was a real bit of bite and nastiness to some of them. He was enjoying that side of his game, and that's probably the biggest difference for me between Sexton and the other out halves is the defensive side. He brings so much in that regard. So that was excellent to see from Byrne, who looked like he just wanted that moment. It was real kind of, give me the ball, I got this, I'm gonna lead you guys home. Yeah. So outstanding for Leinster to have that depth of player. I think that Larmour try you mentioned, it was a lovely pass, all right. I think that was the kind of straw that broke the camel's back, really, wasn't it? They get in front there, extend their lead out and have a kind of bit of breathing room. It came from a Ryan Baird line-out steal, and the bench seemed to play a massive role on.
Massive role. And I think we should just point to the line-out as well. We've chatted quite a number of times on the pod that Leinster's line-out has been an Achilles heel for them in big games over the last couple of seasons. And if you look at that line-out steal, Leinster were 100% on their own ball, and Exeter were in the 70s. And there's a couple of critical line-out steals, that being probably the critical moment of the game, the Baird steal, his athleticism to get in the air, full stretch to to turn over that line out 5 meters from the Exeter line is an absolutely huge moment. And his set piece work, and then his, I think he had 3 tackles in the game, but they weren't just tackles, they were absolutely dominant hits. You look at the double with Byrne on Ewers. There's another one down the left edge where he just monsters another Exeter back rower. And I think him and the Leinster bench, I think it was probably one of the other big swings in the game, was the test level players that Leinster were bringing off the bench compared to possibly a little bit of a weaker Exeter bench. And that really told. A couple of critical scrum penalties in the second half, which one Leinster got 3 points from directly from the scrum, another one that they went to the 22 and off the line, they got a penalty and took 3 points. So indirectly that led to 6 points in that second half when the game was in the balance. So obviously the luxury of bringing on Porter, Byrne, who scrummaged really well, and Tracy. So it just points to the depth that we all know that Leinster have in abundance. And it was a crucial component in winning the game.
Yeah, set piece was absolutely awesome really this time around, and will be key against La Rochelle certainly. They'll obviously be frustrated with the Maul try where it looks like Scott Fardy tries to pull the backlifter Thomas Francis in behind the line of catcher for that kind of sneaky penalty, and Raynal delights in telling him that he got it wrong, I think, afterwards. But we saw the power of the Exeter drive, the cohesive nature of it when they get a chance like that. But Leinster, again, through the line out, through their game management, they limited that really. And I think Exeter will look back in this game with a massive eye to learning crucial lessons about, again, playing at that top tier. I know they were European champions, but Leinster have been around the block a few more times probably, and there were definite lessons for them in terms of how they managed it after getting up that massive lead. I want to ask you quickly actually about the two non-yellow card calls against Ross Byrne. Like, fair play to me, took a few heavy blows on top of everything. What was your view on those two incidents with Johnny Hill first and then Yanis Kirsten?
Surprised they both weren't yellows, if I'm honest. Obviously the first contact was not to the head with the shoulder, but then the arm comes up and makes contact to the head, so for me they've got to be yellows. I thought there was a really weird communication between referee and TMO, because when the referee goes, I'm going penalty only, no yellow card, and the referee comes in and goes, but his arm hits his face.
Yeah.
And there's silence. Yeah. And then Raynal just continues on. So that's the frustrating ones where you just want the TMO to be a little bit more assertive in going, the directives are contact to the head. Direct contact to the head is obviously the mitigation is the initial contact isn't to the head, but that it should still be yellow.
Yeah.
So yeah, especially in today's environment, I was surprised they both weren't yellows.
It was a funny exchange. I actually thought the first one was just a penalty only, and even looking back at it, I still feel that way. I felt the first contact was shoulder on shoulder, legit, and that he's trying to wrap to complete a legal tackle, and he makes, for me, it wasn't a hugely forceful bit of contact. Now Ross Byrne might tell us very differently, but I felt that the second one, even though they're very, very similar incidents, I felt the force was way higher there with Kirsten swinging that arm up through, and actually felt that was yellow. And I was surprised that Raynal just kind of went straight to penalty. And again, his TMO didn't probably have a chance. Philippe Bonhoeur didn't have a chance there to even get in a word. Fortunately, it didn't play a massive, didn't have a decisive say really in the outcome, but might have been very controversial. And it is interesting that we can still have different opinions on incidents after all this time looking at high tackles. As I said, Owen, like La Rochelle next, and they've been on an impressive journey under John O'Gibbs and Ron O'Gara, two very familiar faces. It's going to be a really interesting semi-final. What's your sense at this early stage of Leinster going to France and playing a team who probably don't have that pedigree, I suppose, at this stage of the comp?
Yeah, that when I was reflecting on the La Rochelle Sale game, they were my thoughts, that there were two teams that weren't at the top table of European rugby just yet, and whether they'll have the luxury of leaning on those experiences that Leinster have built up over the last almost decade in those high pressure games. So it's going to be a real test of character for La Rochelle. I think absolutely they have the profile of athlete and power to cause Leinster a massive amount of trouble. I just think that Leinster's this was a big character test, I feel, for Leinster and the past it with flying colours, and and that those big game know-how from those experienced players, I think, is going to be pivotal. But it'll be intriguing how Ronan sets up La Rochelle to play. Obviously, the keep the ball alive philosophy. If he can get in behind that Leinster defence, obviously Leinster have shown some vulnerabilities there, that Exeter have given them a bit of a template there. If he can soften off that line speed and get those defenders defending laterally against the likes of Botica, Aldrey, and some of La Rochelle's power runners, then Leinster could be in for a little bit of trouble. But and I think some of the issues still exist with Leinster's high ball. I think Exeter might have won 4 back at the weekend, Larmer with a couple, Keenan. So that's still an area of concern for Leinster that no doubt O'Gara will have identified, and Lowe's defensive vulnerabilities as well. So there's enough there for La Rochelle to feel like they're going to be in with a real crack. And let's just hope it's a dry, sunny French afternoon and we get a cracking game of rugby, because two teams with a huge amount of X factor.
Yeah, absolutely. And interesting enough, Ron O'Gara wrote a column about James Lowe's defence only very recently. So he's obviously been having a close look. We did get 2 questions just before we finished on La Rochelle there. The first one's from Colm, and we kind of addressed that maybe. He asked about Weenie Antonio and Will Skelton at scrum time. Like, there's no bigger tight head and tight head lock in Europe, really. And he says Leinster don't have a huge second row to anchor the scrum. Do they stick with Ryan and Toner and hope for the best? It does actually look encouraging in terms of the injury returns, like amazing individual performances and a bench impact, plus guys to come back. They're hopeful of James Ryan, maybe Caelan Dorris, Gary Ringrose potentially back in the mix. But as we said, the Leinster scrum own has gone really, really well the last couple of games, and they changed in the wake of that Saracens demolition job. They tweaked their setup, and with Porter coming off the bench and Ed Byrne scrummaging so well, there's clearly a collective effort there as well. So not just about the size, and I actually think they'll continue to look at it as a place to play, to kind of take the game to teams. The other one was one you might come back to on the defence. You've kind of touched on it there, but Kieran Parker asks, will Leinster have to significantly change their defensive setup to cope with La Rochelle's offloading game? Is Robbie Henshaw's choke tackle technique one of the keys to it?
Yeah, it's a great call. I think definitely targeting the ball will be critical. Not allowing the ball carriers time and space to attack your defenders. So really, Leinster's line speed is generally normally pretty good, and they tend to suffocate attacks with their defensive line speed. So obviously a key component of that is ruck speed. If you reflect on Exeter in that first 15 minutes, their ruck speed was exceptionally quick, which denies you opportunity to bring defensive line speed. So I think once Leinster started to assert a little bit of dominance in that ground battle, then that allowed them to be more dominant with their collisions. So taking away time and space for that attack will be critical, because as I said, if you're lateral defensively and giving soft shoulders, they're the ideal opportunities to get arms free and get those offloads away. So yeah, it's a great point, especially with Henshaw's ability to target high on ball and choke those ball carriers up will be critically important. It's just you're probably going to need to have a couple of guys around when it's Botica coming at you full steam, because he's scary powerful.
Oh man, yeah. And Leinster might be without Matthew Reynal, who was their best attacker. He kept running great blocking lines there last weekend. He kept getting in the way.
Very strange position at times.
Yeah, I don't know. He just likes the physical stuff, I think. The other interesting semi-final is Bordeaux against Toulouse. Bordeaux, I didn't expect him to get past Racing, really didn't, but... And Racing were poor, they were missing some key guys, but it was, I suppose, composure off the tee from Matthew Jalibert in the end. And I actually think that helps Leinster a bit. I think they'd rather not play Racing because they're so big, so powerful. They've obviously had really good battles in the past. So to lose Leinster final would have a nice ring to it in terms of going for their 5th titles. So we wait to see what happens there. In the Challenge Cup, Ulster are going to be off to Leicester in the semi-finals after winning on a kind of madcap game. It was up and down. There was yellow cards. There was tries. The lead was changing hands. But they did kind of nail the final 30 minutes to power home.
Yeah, I thought it was probably a pretty pragmatic approach from Ulster where they definitely had a game plan of winning that territorial battle. They had 27 kicks in the game compared to Northampton's 15. And then all the other stats were relatively similar in the game, but the kind of defining one was the number of tackles Northampton had to make. They had to make 200 compared to Ulster's 111. So they just wore Northampton down, I felt, as the game went on. It was real, almost cup final rugby. And again, I think probably a fair reflection of the Ulster environment and where they're trending as a team. It's obviously silverware has been the missing component to Ulster's development in recent years. And they'll be really keen to come away with a title, I think. And they played really good cup rugby away from home. As I said, we're pragmatic. Probably disappointed they didn't take advantage when Northampton were down to 13 men. I think Northampton won that 10 minutes 3-0. But obviously the pressure told, and those sin binnings eventually led to more dominance that Ulster were able to assert off the back of winning field position. So yeah, I thought it was a pragmatic approach from Ulster with a blend of some brilliance. I thought Hume, geez, when he gets the ball, every time he looks like he's going to beat defenders, doesn't he? And there's probably a nicer balance in that Ulster centre partnership if you think how regularly McCluskey is the focal point for that Ulster attack. But I think the stats show McCluskey carried 12 times and Hume carried 13. So a real nice balance and a kind of change up between that direct approach through McCluskey and then the balanced footwork of Hume.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's kind of been McCluskey Marshall for a long time now, and there's real qualities in that. But I think the enthusiasm and energy, as you say, that Hume brings in attack, not naivety, but just backing himself constantly to make ground and make something happen. It's really exciting to watch. And we've mentioned several times that Ulster backline, when they get going forward and when they get good ball, are so lethal. But it was, the pack were outstanding in this game again. Likes of Rob Herring, Jordy Murphy was man of the match, obviously. Big Al O'Connor, and I loved his gallop upfield on that really clever line-out play. We're going to see this everywhere over the next few weeks, I think.
Yeah, they once one team does it, you'll find another couple of teams tend to throw it into the playbook. Yeah, it's a lovely little decoy. Obviously, the front pod work back to manipulate the defensive pod of Northampton, and O'Connor slips through the front, and lovely little ball playing, isn't it, to show to the hooker of the nine that's in the channel. He just, that lovely little show go at darts downfield. Yeah, it was a brilliant moment. And then composure from Ulster in the 22 to just go through phases, and it's Stockdale, isn't it, that ultimately comes up with the try off Billy Burns, that triple threat. Was that that moment, or was that a different moment?
That was the Cooney, yeah. That was the Cooney try, finished off the Alan Connor, yeah.
Sorry, the Stockdale one was a little bit later. But yeah, again, it's almost a carbon copy of just that phase play patience in the 22, where they just go through phases. As you said, all their forwards work exceptionally hard. I thought Nick Timoney was really good again. And yeah, Cooney just darts over from close range. But yeah, lovely little work. Play off the training ground to give them that entry point into the 22.
Yeah, a little bit similar to the Leinster one in the first half, was it? Where they go back into that channel as well. Really clever stuff where McGrath runs out beyond the 15 and Josh van der Vlier drops off there and Conan comes around the corner. I think maybe he could have slipped a pre-contact pass in that instance. Keller gets turned over in the end by Cowan Dickey, but interesting to see two Irish teams going after the same bit of space and that isolated defender in the short side. You mentioned there the Burns kind of assist for Stockdale. I thought it was lovely the way he shapes to use his kicking strengths and then slips the pass. But Cooney and Burns, again, in this competition in particular, they look like a really assured half-back pairing. How important were they?
Yeah, as I said, I thought they delivered the kicking strategy really well. Cooney's box kicking, really accurate, gave their chasers opportunities to contest for the ball. There was a brilliant sequence in the second half off the restart, I think it is, from Northampton. Cooney goes to box, Stockdale chases, catches, Ulster go on the attack. Don't get too much rhythm from the attack, go to kick again, Cooney boxes, and now Burns hits a contestable bomb down that right side, and Balakum just shows his athleticism to catch the ball above his head. Unfortunately, Ulster get penalised for a neck roll off that breakdown, but it just showed that the accuracy of the Ulster kicking was giving their chasers opportunities to contest. And I thought Stockdale and Balakum did a good job in that regard.
Mm. Absolutely. They have to take down pretty much half the Premiership here to get their Challenge Cup. They've taken down Quinns, now Northampton and Leicester next. It's going to be a real battle in Welford Road. As you say, Cup Rugby, it looks like Ulster have prepped really well. I think that's a really insightful point, that we're seeing signs of what they've been working on in training. It does feel like they can't miss this opportunity, though, to grab a bit of silverware to kind of seal what they've been doing behind the scenes.
Yeah, I think it'll weigh heavily on them until they do finally take home a trophy. And as you said, it's been a tough ask to go away to the Premiership, three consecutive games. And Leicester under Steve Borthwick, he's a highly regarded coach, and he seems to be bringing back a little bit of that old Leicester feel to the club with a bit more of a forward dominance approach, which I think is truly in their DNA. So it's going to be a big test for the Ulster pack, and I really hope they can continue the good form and come away with a trophy. I think it'll be just rewards for the effort and the progress that's going on up in Ulster.
Absolutely spot on. Listen, it was a good weekend across the board for Irish teams, including in the Women's Six Nations. A remarkable record win, 45-0 away in Cardiff against the Welsh. And it started so well. Within the first attacking possession, they were ahead. A kick return, and we saw them shift the ball straight to Bavin Parsons. Really nice bit of structure, actually, to allow them to get the ball over to the left edge. There was nice variety in terms of Catherine Dane sniping from scrum half, the pick and jams. Hannah Tyrrell makes the kind of key bust just before the try, and Dane a long pass to Emer Considine to finish. 11 phases, and it just boded so well for what was to come from Ireland. They barely let up, and they had the bonus point inside the first quarter. And everyone is talking about Bavin Parsons, and that try from the right-hand side scrum for the second was something special, wasn't it?
Yeah, it took me a bit by surprise when I saw it, to be honest. It was just the power she showed. Obviously, really well-executed scrum play. We talked about how clinical Leinster were in that regard. But yeah, a lovely little miss two, 10-12. Good skills to hit the 15. And obviously, just get the ball in Parsons' hands early to allow her kind of wind up. And it looks like the defence has come across and kind of shepherded her well. And you think the opportunity is gone, but the power she shows in contact is really impressive. And then matched with her foot speed, I just really loved the way when she was going in that left edge and steps infield off her left foot, that she doesn't slow. She's obviously a really good athlete, that the ability to change direction without losing pace is a really key attribute for top-class wingers. I thought that was a really nice moment and a great finish.
Absolutely. Tom was on, one of our members, asking a question. He says, given how much of a baller Bavin Parsons is, how long before clubs in England or France come calling for her? And there's no doubt everyone wants her in her team. I think she's going to play a massive role in the sevens as well. Obviously, there's a 15s World Cup to come next year, the postponed one. But beyond that, you've got an Olympics, and I'd be shocked if we don't see her in that programme trying to push Ireland into an Olympics games. She's a superstar, really, and a great inspiration, I know, already to younger girls in the game. And yeah, her impact continued just a couple of minutes later when she finishes off a handy finish this time for her after Hannah Tyrrell's brilliant crossfield kick that came from Kira Griffin's kind of characteristic block down and break of a kick. And the Considine bonus point try was there was really poor Welsh defense, obviously, and Ireland will be realistic about that. But even just before, there's a nice short line from Eve Higgins on her debut off Naupu. Again, Dane with an excellent pass to pick out Considine. And there was nice variety to the other scores as well. They score off the 5 metre scrum. Dominant stuff up front from Lindsay Pete and co. And Dane kind of scoots off it and hits Naupu short on that line. There was the Dorothy Wall try. She was immense, I thought. 20-year-old delivering 24 carries and 8 tackles, top of the charts there as well. And deserved her try. Nice little pass from Aoife McDermott as they go back down the short side. And then Hannah Tyrrell just fittingly kind of finished it off. She's been excellent at 10 the last couple of games. And Stacey Flood actually came on and gave a lovely pass to send her away. It was a kind of 7-style finish. So really encouraging start for them, albeit against very weak opposition. And the latest is that, listen, the France game is going to go ahead this weekend. There'll be an exemption for elite athletes. So that is absolute happy days. Really fascinated to see how Ireland go in that fixture against a semi-professional opposition and potentially into a final against England. So lots to look forward to there. Before we kind of start looking towards the next couple of weeks on, though, we got a random question here from Kalon in the members group. He says, could you ask Owen to give us a brief overview of the extended Japanese squad and what to extend when they play the Lions? Now, I'm not sure if everyone's aware that of who's in who's where in the Japanese squad and what's been going on. So maybe you might bring us up to date and let us know what's happening around that.
Yeah, the name of, I think it's a 52-man squad that'll be trimmed down to 35 when they hopefully travel over to play the Lions. They've slated in a fixture for Japan as well before they go on tour, but I've just no idea who that's going to be against. Obviously, with travel restrictions and quarantine, etc., it's logistically tough. But there's an exciting feel for some of the kind of new guys that have come into the squad. Heavy Suntory influence. Like, there's 12 Suntory players named in the squad, and they're obviously being exceptional in the top league. And then they're called Gaijins over here, overseas players that are now Japan eligible. So for Panasonic, Ben Gunter and Jack Cornelison in the back row. And a hugely exciting prospect, that Kobe number 8, Louis Nayata. Like, he scored 7 tries in the first 3 games before he got suspended for a high tackle. But watch out for him. I think he's going to be a pretty special player. And then from our perspective, a guy with a huge reputation from university rugby in Japan is a guy called Sia Fafita, who signed for Kintetsu. He just played his first game for us a couple of weeks ago, and he is an exceptional athlete, a center, really physical, good skill set. And I would say he's going to be pretty close to making that final Japan squad. He's got a huge future ahead of him. And then, interestingly, from an Australian context, there's been a number of young Australians that have come to Japan in the last 3 to 4 years with an eye to nationalizing and being eligible for the Japan team. And one of those is Dylan Riley, who was a part of a really strong Australia under-20s team a couple of years ago. And he plays for Panasonic, so he's been named in that initial squad. And the other interesting one that obviously some of the Munster supporters will have remembered is Gerhard van de Heever, who plays for Kubota. He's now Japan eligible as well, so a big winger. A big Gaijin influence, as they'd say over here, to the Japan squad. And obviously they're going to look to... They haven't had a test match, unfortunately, since the World Cup. So they obviously want to try and build on the momentum that they had during that 2019 World Cup.
Mm. And an unchanged coaching team, as far as I know. Like, they'll be looking to bring forward what they did at the World Cup, which was so impressive.
Yeah, Jamie Joseph is still there. I'm not so sure if he's made it back to Japan yet. And obviously Tony Brown is head coach of the Highlanders, so he's got a busy period at the moment. But he's remained on as the attack coach, so both likely to return to Japan at the end of the super season.
Mm. What's your sense of it? Like, can they take that, I suppose, permanent step? They're quarterfinalists of a World Cup now. Do you think they're there to stay?
I genuinely do. I think obviously maintaining the coaching staff that they have for the World Cup in terms of continuity, it was massively important. So you're not changing a huge amount from a system perspective. And then a lot of the guys that were involved in the World Cup are still there. Obviously, a couple of high profile absentees was probably Shota Tahoria, the hooker, that didn't make it. And then I guess probably one of the legends of Japanese rugby is Tama, the second row, who also played for Kintetsu. He's retired now and back in New Zealand. So a couple of the more experienced guys have exited the squad, but I think the profile of guys they're bringing in are probably going to add a little bit more power to that pack, particularly, which is, as it has at times historically, been a bit of an Achilles heel for Japan, especially when they go up against the big sides. There was a noticeable gulf, I think, when they played South Africa in that quarterfinal. So if they can add some power to their pack, and we all know the skill sets and ability that they have in their attacking structure, that they'll cause any team's problems. So yeah, really exciting how they're going to develop over the next couple of years leading into the 2023 World Cup.
Yeah, absolutely. Bring back Tomo, I say. He's a good Black Rock man as well. We fond of him over here in Ireland, and he gave us a few handy interviews during the World Cup as well. Just to look forward briefly, there's some pretty good news. As we're recording, this is kind of breaking, so I haven't got all the details here, but I just wanted to run past you on, because Leinster Rugby say they've submitted plans to the government to get a crowd in potentially as early as next month, using antigen testing and social distancing. And I'm sure there's lots of detail in there, but it's exciting on a Monday to see that. And you've had crowds, obviously, in Japan. How much of a difference has it made, even if it's limited numbers?
Massive difference. Yeah, it's obviously my first year dealing with playing in empty stadiums, and it's not a real nice atmosphere. Obviously, the team are trying to create their own energy and build some atmosphere into the game. But yeah, in our stadium at the weekend, there was a doubleheader on Saturday and Sunday, and both games had 10,000 people at it. And Osaka is in the midst of a kind of third wave. We've had numbers up in the high 800s, 900s, but they're still happy to have 10,000 people at a game. So it just shows their approach. I think every country has different ways of dealing with the pandemic, but yeah, they've capped it at 10,000, and both games were kind of last minute wins, really dramatic, and the atmosphere was outstanding. Yeah,
absolutely great stuff. If this gets green light, there's going to be some battle for tickets. Everyone want to be there, potentially having their pint and watching Leinster. It just seems unthinkable, really, but fingers crossed, and fair play to Leinster for getting a plan together. And the other bit I just wanted to confirm it again was that it does look like the exemptions have been granted for, obviously, for the Leinster game in a couple weekends time, and for the Ireland women game against France this weekend. There's loads of debate here on around, again, the professionalism or lack thereof in women's rugby in terms of actual being paid. But there's obviously lots of professionalism in the preparation, and they're going to play a semi-professional team this weekend. What's your sense of that in terms of women's rugby and moving forward with professional England, semi-professional France, and then other teams who are amateur? How tough is it going to be for them to keep pace?
Really difficult. I think the gulf in terms of, there's certain things you'll get away with, but in terms of the I think the gym is a massive component to professional rugby. The gains that athletes can get in a high performance environment where they're in a gym environment up to two times a day, the hands-on coaching, the access to players, obviously the non-professional environments, still extremely dedicated athletes, but having to work as well as train is hugely challenging. So to be able to solely focus on your craft and have the best in class in terms of coaching structures, facilities to make those gains probably quicker than would be realistically possible in a non-professional environment, I think is hugely important. And it will be a massive disadvantage for those teams if they're coming up against fully professional sides. It would be that you would find that gulf would grow pretty quickly.
So Ireland up against the odds this weekend, but loads to be excited about. I mean, I'm looking forward to watching this, given there's going to be so many eyes on it as well. I think it's brilliant that the standalone nature of the competition allows that, and no provincial rugby this weekend will add to the crowd, you'd imagine, even more. And Ireland definitely tracking in the right direction. Obviously, the World Cup to come, they still have to qualify for that next year as well. But as we said, they've got stars like Parsons and Dorothy Wall coming through, players who've been in the game for a long time and have that rugby IQ probably. Great to see the 10 jersey probably being finally grabbed by Hannah Tyrrell now, because that's been kind of chopped and changed. And there's lovely balance in the back row with Wall coming in there alongside Claire Malloy. And obviously Kira Griffin, the captain, up front, they're scrummaging and mauling well. So all signs are pointing in the right direction. So we look forward to having a look back at that game. It's going to be a cracker this weekend and get centre stage. But that's it for now on. Enjoy your weekend, I hope.
Hopefully.
That we are talking next after a really good result.
Yeah, fingers crossed.
Go well. Thanks to everyone also for tuning in. As always, we're back on Thursday, so we'll chat to you then.
I don't think we've met before, but I'm the referee on this field.
Leinster could have me 5 mil a year, I wouldn't go.
It is Tommy Moore!
Robbie Weekly.
Getting the first pass. Score! Drive to Ireland!
Magic!
You're not alive until you start kicking when the real...